So, the good news is you are all born into the most powerful supercomputer that the universe has ever known, probably will know for a long, long time. The human brain weighs something like 3 pounds, comprised mostly of fat, possibly capable of hundreds of trillions of neural connections, processing speeds that no Macintosh could even dream of. So that's a good thing. We have minds that have allowed us in a relatively short span of time, speaking in terms of evolution, to allow us to become the dominant species of the planet. We can do things with our sight that are pretty amazing in terms of image recognition, and we can do all sorts of envisioning of future outcomes and planning and work with language. It's an extremely powerful tool that we all have. The less fortunate news is that the hardware was designed 50,000 years ago. And so that alone creates some problems. The brain as a computer uses up far more energy than it gulps up energy that it doesn't actually need. Has us eat and hunt down security when we don't really even need it. It's an energy gulper. Has a tendency to crash when we get stressed out and we're unaware. Sort of like we don't monitor our activities and we start building up too many responsibilities and we crash. Not just nervous breakdowns, we just completely stop functioning. And then also, we don't network particularly well at times. It's not that we don't have enough ports. Look at him working with this analogy, Zach. He's wincing already. We have enough ports. We have eyes and ears and a mouth, and we can communicate with our hands. But we have large regions of the brain set up for fear and anger and suspicion, the amygdala. So that's obviously a problem. But then on top of it all, there's the operating systems that are ingrained by our caregivers, the school systems, the schoolyard bullies, the workforce, the things we see other people do that's installed, that creates so much unnecessary suffering. So when we meditate and when we practice our spiritual endeavors, what we're doing is we're basically upgrading our operating system so that we can function without anywhere near as much stress and suffering as most people do. We're working with the default wiring and default programming that they receive in this world. One of the ways we create so much unnecessary suffering is what is called perception. In Buddhist terminology, this is known as sana, S-A-N-N-A, but what it basically means is the mental labels that we add onto every experience, the categories that we drop people, places, things, situations into. A way of noting, very basically, I like this, I don't like this, this is good for me, this sucks, this is easy and fun, I hate this, etc. They generally tend to be very simplistic. This is good for my survival, this makes me worried and nervous, and I think it's not working in my favor. So, with each person, with each event in life that triggers any emotional response, what we're doing is we are cognitively labeling it as good or bad. One way we do this is the Buddha suggested, and this is where the computer analogy breaks down, is with gut feelings. When there's something or a situation that we don't like, we add stress. When there's something we do like, the body relaxes. There's a sense of ease. So there's feelings that we tag. Whenever we go through a difficult experience in life, we tense up, we become defensive. And then later on in life, when we see anything that reminds us of that original situation, it could be somebody with the same hair color as somebody who insulted us previously, or it could be a sound or a situation that's similar to a catastrophic or traumatic event from our childhood, we associate these stimuli with danger and we tense up. So that's one form of labeling, but that's not the only way we label. We also label linguistically. We say to ourselves, ooh, I don't like this guy. Something wrong with this person. Or, ooh, very nice. Very attractive. Then there's also the little visual cues we add on. We remember the most scary expressions from the teachers of our childhood. That's what the brain has, this part called the fusiform gyrus, which is the fastest part of the brain, and what it does is store image recognition. You store little videos of people. Oh, yeah, I remember you. You were the bastard that frowned at me. Or, yes, you were the waitress who smiled. Clearly you like me. Men have a tendency to, what's the psychological phrase? Hyperinflate friendliness without any sense of the situation. So, the problem is that we misperceive all the time, and we cause ourselves so much stress and suffering by labeling things in our childhood or in early young adult life as difficult and dangerous, that later on in life when we have to do these things, we resist them because all these tags of this is bad, I don't like this, this is not good for me, come up. For example, you're young, you have to write a paper, you're worried about it, you don't feel particularly experienced in writing a paper, you get all stressed out, you start breathing rapidly, your muscles get tense, you start thinking about the negative associations, and then maybe you get a C, and you remember the look on your parents' face of disappointment. And so later on in life, when you have to write anything, all of this underlying perceptions that we've tagged writing a paper come up. So you create all this additional stress. The problem is, of course, when you're an adult, writing a paper is far less of an encumbered, dangerous thing than it is when we're young and in school, where it seems that so much depends upon it. The same thing with dating and socialization. When we're young and so much feels at stake, we tend to overly tag so many different situations that would be good for us to be relaxed at while we do, like going through conflicts, making amends when we've been unskillful, forgiving people, working through challenges. All these things we tag as dangerous. The body gets stressed, we recall the images that were the most troublesome, we add the linguistic tag, this really sucks, I don't want to do it. So, one of the fields of clinical psychology that focuses really on this is come about because of all the research that's gone into baseline happiness of late, and also the work by cognitive therapists along the lines of cognitive dissonance and stuff like that. So it's interesting stuff, and I figure since I read this shit, there's no reason why I should suffer alone. And so I'm going to give you an overview of some of the ways my brain and your brain create incorrect perceptual tags and cause ourselves suffering. The first is overgeneralization, magnification, and all-or-nothing thinking, which basically boils down to we jump the gun. We label things too quickly before we have enough information. First day on the job, all the new faces you got to know, all the new skills you got to master. It's a new situation. You're worried. You think, I've blown it. This day, which really sucks, all the days are going to be this overwhelming. I should have stayed at my old job. I should have stayed unemployed. Why did I accept this job? This sucks. This is terrible. All on day one. We do this all the time. We see somebody else. We were late for work and stressed out. Swipe the card in the subway. We don't have enough money in it. The machine isn't working. We run up to the guy, or perhaps we feed a $20 bill in the machine, which eats it up. Then we run to the subway clerk, and he can't help us. And we decide he's a Nazi. We don't have enough information to know if he's a Nazi or not. He might be a Nazi. He probably isn't. The slightest standing in our way in a subway entrance or blocking an elevator entrance is tagged as Nazis, war criminals. You get it. So we tend to tag too quickly. So the second way we misperceive is what's known as confirmation bias. I love this one. Confirmation bias is, say you're out on a date. And again, any situation where you are stressed out, where there's emotions and a sense of survival flowing, cortisol being released, that's when we tend to hyper-tag things as good or bad, because we feel our survival is at stake. And the one situation in life where we really feel our survival is more at stake than any other is dating. So, your survival is really not at stake, but that's not what the mind thinks. So we're already keyed up, and then you're at this dinner, and you're perhaps all excited about it, and perhaps she or he has had a long day, and they're exhausted, and you say a joke or say an incident, and they yawn in the middle of it. It's not a comment at all on the validity or the interest of what you're saying. It's just that they're tired. But the mind tends to take things hyper-personally. That's another way we misperceive. But then, after we label them as aloof, uncaring, holier than thou, and what's their problem, then what we do is, in confirmation bias, after the date, people call up their friends and, she was really cold and aloof. I was, you know, putting all this energy in, and what was she doing? She was yawning. Have you ever heard her yawn at you? And your friend goes, well, I guess. Yeah, you see. They're aloof. Cold, aloof, terrible person. How could I wind up with? So, that's confirmation bias. The mind does not play devil's advocate. The mind actually, a wonderful quote from a neuroscience book I was reading, the mind actually looks for reasons to validate its initial label. We don't like to second guess ourselves. Whatever we tag somebody as, we like to confirm it. This is because the mind basically wants to make things easy for itself. The quicker we can categorize people as good or bad, worthwhile or worth avoiding, whatever, the mind feels, okay, I've done all my work with that person, I can move on. Life has got too many things I've got to deal with. I want to immediately judge as many people as quickly as possible. And it all would be great if we judged always correctly. But guess what? The amount of cognitive dissonance, misperceptions that the mind does that creates unnecessary suffering is staggering. To continue on, because there's so much in this rich field of how we fuck ourselves up. There is reconstructive memories, which is every time the mind remembers something, it rewrites the memory. It doesn't actually put it in a place and leave it. Every time you think of something, you're rewriting it. You're refiling it, changing it. So if during a certain point of time you've gotten new information, you will completely rewrite that memory. For example, suppose you were dating someone and subsequently they broke up with you and you don't like them anymore because they broke up with you. Then somebody says, hey, remember the time that you and X came out to our house? You probably won't remember, but if you do, you'll immediately assume that you were having a miserable time because, after all, you were with X, who you no longer like. So you file that now under, oh yeah, I had to go to that place, and I was with X, and that really sucked, when in fact, you might have had a perfectly good time. This is just the way the mind rewrites all the memories in accordance with our present-day feelings. There's ruminative bias, which I love. Ruminative bias is the more you think of something, it doesn't matter how outlandish, the more likely you'll think it is to be true. I'll give you an example. You may have somebody that claims that they've been anally probed by an alien. But if you actually start thinking about this more than a few times, believe it or not, your brain will start thinking it's a possibility. Why? Because, oh, I've heard of that before. Well, actually, it was you that was thinking it. People can work themselves into all sorts of paranoid states simply by having one thought, immediately disregarding it as ludicrous. The second time, oh yeah, no, that doesn't seem likely. By the third time, it's, maybe I will lose everything and go bankrupt out of the blue. By the fourth time, you're preparing for imminent bankruptcy. The more we think about things, the more we create the likelihood in our mind that it will occur. This is why thinking is actually not as harmless an activity if it's done without any awareness than it seems. One of my favorite is misperceptions, which is simply the times that we completely, completely miss the plot. Akin to when somebody's tired and they yawn and we view it as a statement about ourselves. There's this wonderful online thing where you're asked to watch a video and count how many times the basketball has bounced. And of course, at the end of the video, they ask, what did the person in the gorilla outfit do during the video? Now, if you haven't been primed by me, now that you see it, it won't work. But you can try it with a friend. While they're counting the amount of times the basketball has been bounced between four rather bland-looking college students who are probably psych majors, in between them, a guy in a gorilla outfit stands and waves for a while and then walks off. But we're so hyper-focused on our tasks that we don't see something that's happening right in the middle of the video. We misperceive situations all the time. I was reading an article on the occipital lobe, which is the thing that allows us to process external visual fields. And it seems that only 3% of the world we're actually seeing, and the rest is actually created for us by memory. Once again, we're only seeing a very small percentage, and the rest is being created for us. I actually brought a quote because I like this. And here we go. This is by a guy named Marcus Raichel, who's a neuroscientist, and he wrote that only a small fraction of the inputs to to your visual lobe come directly from the external world. The bulk of the inputs comes from your memory stores and your perceptual processing modules, i.e. what we've tagged that person as. Your brain simulates the world. Each of us lives in a virtual reality that's close enough to the real thing that we don't bump into the furniture. So, given this state of affairs, it's important to note that the mind does not like to acknowledge that it's made a mistake and untag things that we've tagged as difficult. It would be easy if it was simply the images and the words that we associate, but on top of everything else, we've got those pesky feelings that arise when we have to write the papers or go to the dentist or exercise or whatever it is we dread. And those feelings are very, very, very difficult to undo. In fact, it costs a lot of expensive dollars in therapy to refile your childhood, refile some of the important things we have to do. It requires often in cognitive behavioral therapy, which I believe they do, is they very slowly step people through the things that we've developed fears and stress around, and we just very slowly reintegrate these things through life so that the mind refiles the situation, whether it's heights or conflict or walking outside or asking for a raise or whatever it is we dread, to refile it, to not only refile the thoughts and the images, but the feelings, requires a lot of slow work. So what I'm getting at is it's best to develop a mind that doesn't jump the gun, that doesn't unnecessarily tag people or situations as difficult or wrong or bad without being absolutely sure. So how do we do this? The key is, first of all, to practice mindfulness throughout the day, which is basically having an awareness of the breath and the body and making sure that we're not carrying around too much physical stress. Because the more we are stressed out, the more stress we carry, the more likely it is we are going to simply put someone under the category of, I don't like them. It could simply be because we're in a rush and that person has asked us for something. We need to get things done and they have gotten for a moment in our way. But to simply tag somebody entirely or to write them off as a pain in the ass is not only to create unnecessary conflict in our lives, but it's also to create future situations where we'll find working with these people impossible. So the less stress we physically carry, the less likelihood that we're going to misperceive or fall into cognitive dissonance. The second way we can do this is when we meet somebody and we immediately have that suspicion, you know, I don't like the way they dress. What's that, you know, rat t-shirt they're wearing? AC/DC, that's so 2006. I was wearing a Minor Threat t-shirt way before this person. I don't like the way they're looking at me. Look at the way they hold themselves. They think they're holier. They think they know more than me. So we immediately have this looking. And we go for the quick judgment. And so it's very important to not only keep the body relaxed, but when we feel that movement of categorizing happening, I practice a very simple metta, which is, may I be peaceful, may they be peaceful. May I be peaceful, may they be peaceful. All beings deserve happiness. It gets me out of that need to immediately put somebody or some situation that's new into a category. When I was learning the accordion, which sucked beyond words, as I was talking the other week, you got things moving in other directions, one's got a key, one's got buttons, and you're playing the accordion, which makes you look like a lunatic, right? Immediately you're a loser. You've got an accordion in your hand. So to get out of this immediate state of what have I done with my life, I would literally practice relaxing, breathing, because there's so much resistance to sucking at anything. There's so much of a desire when I'm not good at something to say, this is really stupid. Why am I bothering swimming, paying bills, going to a doctor, talking with anybody? It's all such a waste of time. It's all so stressful. Why can't I, you know, have a life where I don't have to do any of this? Well, the key is to have a mind that's skillfully wishing happiness for ourselves and others, relaxing the breath and the body, bringing ease. It's also important to learn how, when we work through something that's difficult, to congratulate ourselves. This doesn't mean eating a cookie. Oh, good, now I get to watch 5 Breaking Bads in a row. My mind thinks that, but I limit myself to 2 at most. But it is important to learn how to reward ourselves. We are under the impression as human beings that when there's something that we've already tagged as stressful, such as, I don't know, something stressful. Mm-hmm. What? Geometry?
Job
interviews. Geometry would have been good for me, but okay, let's start with job interviews. Which everybody hates, because we feel that we're judged, and we generally don't bring in a lot of self-esteem. It brings up all those memories of childhood where we had to go and prostrate ourselves before teachers and parents and be reviewed. So we view any situation where somebody who's going to sum us up is threatening. It's bringing all that. So it's very important when we go into a job interview to cognitively re-perceive it, which is not only I deserve happiness and reflecting that nothing, in fact, is going to be solved by having a job in terms of lasting happiness, only the worldly happiness of paying the rent. But in terms of our long-term peace of mind, rarely do moving up in the career path matter that much. Relaxing the body, relaxing the breath, but then also we can cognitively re-perceive. Rather than viewing it as a threatening situation, we can tell ourselves, I'm interviewing them. They're not interviewing me. I'm deciding if they're good enough for me to work at their place. It's actually a simple trick that allows me, when I have to go through those things, to find it very easy just to view it as, oh yeah, I have to interview this guy now. But these are the ways that we can skillfully, cognitively retrain the mind, rather than falling back into the habit of re-ingraining it as something that's stressful. We change the way we tag it. We change the tagging of bills to, oh, good, now I get to get this out of the way so that I get to live my life and, you know, be happy. Haven't really worked that well with that one, but I'm trying. But we can be skillful. My teacher, Ajahn Jep, often talks about practicing relabeling things that in the mind, when the images come up, as fear, the thought of having to do something like a job interview, when they come up, instead of trembling or allowing the body to get stressed out or allowing the mind to reload the label of, oh, Tuesday's really going to suck. I have to wake up early. I have to get dressed in this uncomfortable clothes and go to this shitty place where this guy is going to judge me. Instead, I just simply say, welcome. Let's see how this thought is presenting itself to me. Let's see how it's trying to scare me. Welcome. Just that greeting. And then the rewarding ourselves when we go through it. Not just treating ourselves well, but stopping and saying, I just did something that was hard, that causes me stress. I deserve to stop, to feel good, to call up somebody, to tell them about it. It might sound dumb to call up a friend and tell them about that you've walked through something that causes you fear, because so much of our conversations is based on the things that we don't like. Can you believe that? Blah, 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 blah. I can't believe how shitty my day was. Can I tell you? It's less easy for us to say, I just went through a job interview. But the more we practice that, the more we practice developing feelings of fullness and happiness around the things that we've previously tagged as dangerous, the more we'll be able in the future to walk through these situations in life. So I've prattled on long enough about the brain and shit like that. I hope there was something that you found of interest in there somewhere, and I thank you as always for coming, and now's your turn to ask any questions or share any experiences that are of any interest to you.